This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And Bill Parcells came to me and he goes, "Sims, you know, now we're together." He goes, "We're going to do it my way." And then he turned into Bill Parcells. Took control of everything, coached everybody. And right away we go to camp with a bunch of new rookies, a new team. And you can see everything has changed.
Game Time with Boomer Esiason. This week's guest is New York Giants two-time Super Bowl champion, Bill Sims. Presented by GoDaddy and Geico.
Some people who see us sitting across from one another on CBS's NFL Today assume that today's guest and I were separated at birth. I don't know how that ever happens. However, when I arrived in New York from Cincinnati back in 1993 to begin a three-year stint as the Jets quarterback, he was concluding his marvelous career as the Giants signal caller. It's my pleasure to welcome the MVP of Super Bowl 21 and my buddy Phil Sims.
All
good
right.
To see you, brother.
Yeah, marvelous. Marvelous. You should have put torturous.
Torturous.
Yeah, because, you know, it was injuries, this, that. So that's the way pro football goes.
That's the way it does go. And, you know, of all places, you come out of Springfield, Kentucky.
That's where I was born.
You had a tough dad who was on you every step of the way, right? I mean, where did the whole idea that possibly you could become a football player come out of?
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that didn't come probably till I was in college. Mm-hmm. Because my dad was a baseball player. He was one of those guys that was actually the, you know, the summer touring baseball team. They're farmers.
Right.
So they had a team, and he was a pitcher, and you know, I have four other brothers, and man, it was nothing but only one sport mattered to him, baseball.
Right.
And when I started playing football, he's going, well, you know, he couldn't have cared less.
You obviously played football in high school.
In high school, sure.
And so Morehead State had to find you somehow. How did they find you?
I don't know how they really actually found me. I think they just my name got out there a little bit, not much. I wasn't recruited really by any schools, maybe Wake Forest a little bit. And then when they looked at my grades, they said, "Hey, nice talking to you." So that was it. And so Louisville Trinity is the big school down there in high school.
Okay.
And one of their coaches had left and was down at Morehead State. And that's how I got on their recruiting list, thank God. And I got the treatment to go down there, picked up in a station wagon with six other recruits. And they drove us down to the school. We spent the weekend and drove back. So
I'm
that
just
was
sure. I think the first time you put the uniform on and you step out of practice, where are you on the depth chart your freshman year?
Well, I was a red shirt. So that made it easier. But if there was a depth chart, I probably would have been, at worst, third. Just, you know, there was five quarterbacks there, mm-hmm. all on scholarship back then. And they were good, but, you know, I just thought, okay, I see where I can fit in here right away.
I think most people don't think of Morehead State as having a Division I scholarship program. I mean, it's a small program.
Yeah, well, it was what back then it was called Division I AA.
Okay.
So I don't know how many scholarships that was. I'm going to say it was 65. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's pretty big, and it's it was good competition.
How many games did you play?
I started every game in my career.
All right, so how many was that? Did you play in
I think we only played 11, maybe 1 year. We always played 10.
Like you played like 33 games or something.
Yeah, well, 10 each year is, Boomer, your math would be at least 40.
You had a preseason game, right?
No, we couldn't scrimmage anybody nothing. Before then. No, nothing.
So,
no.
And then the interesting thing is, how many winning records did you have in
None.
College?
Not
one winning record?
I thought the most I ever won in a year was two. But I look back, for some reason, I saw my record and said, hey, I won 3 1 year. And, you know, the great thing about it, well, it wasn't great about losing. But we were always the homecoming team on the visiting road. So we played in front of fans. That's all. And that was great because, you know, we didn't have big crowds when we played at home.
This is crazy. I mean, when people hear your story, like, they probably can't believe that you went to Morehead State, you had losing records. How in the world does the NFL find somebody like you?
The story is there was a guy, a coach at the University of Kentucky. They were there looking at their kids. And there was Derek Ramsey was a quarterback there, a lot of great players at the time at Kentucky. And he goes, oh, man, I got to make a trip to Morehead. Do I need to go down there? And the guy goes, yeah, I think you better go. They got a quarterback. He goes, really? The big scout, area scout for the whole NFL. So he comes down, looks at my tape, and he sees me. They bump me, and he says, could you throw a few footballs? And I said, sure. So I had a guy, and I threw about probably 15 passes. He goes, coach, get the coffee pot on, buy a bunch of donuts. It's going to be an avalanche when I put this report out.
When Phil Simms was drafted as the 7th overall pick by the Giants back in 1979, New York newspaper headlines read, Phil who? I keep saying that to this day. He'd go on to play 15 years for the Giants, and a few years later, Sports Illustrated rated him as the most underrated quarterback of all time. So when you hear that, how do you feel about that?
I didn't know that.
You didn't know about that?
No, I didn't know that. You know, but that's pretty cool to have that moniker, I guess.
Oh, I think it's very
cool. But Phil who, all that stuff, people say, how did it affect you coming up here? And I go, I wasn't offended at all.
One of the funny stories you've told me, and unfortunately Zeke has passed away, just recently passed away, Zeke Brakowski,
right,
came to work you out down in your backyard. Is that true?
Yes, it's true as can be. I said, look, I'm going to be home because I maybe it was a break.
Well, obviously Zeke Brakowski is now coaching at this time.
Yeah, he's at Green Bay.
Yeah, he was the backup to Bart Starr all those years. And
I think he's the offensive coordinator at the time.
Right, so now he's with the Green Bay Packers, and he's coming down to work you out in your backyard.
He came to my house, and you know who my receivers were? My brothers. They stayed home from work, and they're out there running routes and catching it, and it's cold and windy.
Right.
And I when I was throwing, I said, man, I am throwing it well today. And my brothers are jumping and catching it and all that. It was really awesome. And when it was over, he came in the house. We had lunch. My mom was a great baker. She made apple pie and something else. And he sat there for probably about 2 hours.
Just getting to know you and the family.
Getting to know me. And I definitely was, if I wouldn't have gone to the Giants, there was many teams, not many, but Green Bay definitely would have drafted me.
How about meeting and talking with Bill Walsh?
Well, Bill Walsh came down and worked me out twice.
Right.
Which was really cool. I knew all about his history with the Bengals. I already knew all that. He was at Stanford and everything. And he was really cool. You know, he had just this swag about him.
This West Coast swag about
him. Yeah, and he had a white sweatsuit on with the 49ers stripes down the side. And he stood like this. And we watched film together. And he goes, wow. Well, okay. And he was, you know, this. He goes, let's go throw. And I had like 6 kids to catch for me. I'm out there and I'm just ripping it as hard as I can. He goes, whoa, what are you doing? I go, I thought you wanted to see this. He goes, no, I want you to throw it with rhythm and make it beautiful.
Well, he was the master of the West Coast offense.
But just to say the way he said it, and I want it to be pretty. What the hell is wrong with you? And so I started kind of doing it. And he goes, no, softer. I want perfect. Oh, yeah. And he talked the whole time. And the workout, Boomer, I don't even know if I broke a sweat. Because it was so effortless in this.
Really? So he wanted you to be smooth.
Yeah, which he taught. Right. And he taught that rhythm and everything. And I threw the ball great.
Now, did Ray Perkins, who was the head coach of the Giants, come down and work you out as well?
Oh, yes.
What was that like?
It was brutal.
Why was that brutal?
Because he wanted everything to be as hard as I could throw it. And I probably, no exaggeration, it was probably an hour and a half.
Did you have any idea?
I was exhausted.
Really?
Yeah.
When he left, did you have any idea that he was going to go for you?
I think after I worked out for him, they sent down another area scout who worked me out. Jerry Shea was their head scout at the time. And then Ray Perkins called Wayne Chapman, my head coach, and said, look, we're going to draft him. And the coach is going, really? I don't know. So the coach, of course, comes and tells me. And, you know, I wasn't excited. I was like, man, I don't want to go to New York. I want to go to San Francisco or here.
Right.
So, but that's how I found out.
And lo and behold, the legend was born. During the 2 weeks of practice prior to Super Bowl 21, Phil Simms was throwing strikes, yet reporters kept asking him all about Denver Broncos counterpart, John Elway. Heck, I was doing the same thing. Simms, he was irritated because, as he puts it, I honestly believed I was a better quarterback.
Yeah.
And you have to believe that.
I wasn't irritated. I had a lot of fun with it. Old writer from the Miami Herald. He goes, what do you think about this experience? I said, man, this is great. And I'm having a good time. And
Springfield,
he goes,
Kentucky boy playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
think
about
that.
I was really enjoying the process. I wasn't worried about the game. And he said something about, well, what would you have done in Morehead State if John Elway, if he would had came there or whatever? I said, well, he'd have been number two quarterback behind me.
You had one of the greatest quarterback performances ever in Super Bowl history, and I'll never forget that because now I was in the NFL and I was actually covering that Super Bowl for a local CBS.
This is amazing.
In Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And I interviewed you and everything else. You were very kind to me and all that other stuff. And then I watched you perform, and you started that game 6-for-6.
Right.
And I know as quarterbacks from the same era, we always used to worry about getting up and being on and making sure that we were going to throw the ball right, it was going to feel right coming out of our hands. When did you feel like you knew this was going to be a perfect game?
In my recollection of the game is that everybody was wide open. Then I've seen tapes of the game and go, whoa, it wasn't as open as I remember it being. So you know how it is in that league. Everything's close. And that day, I just happened to put them in right spots. But I don't know. I don't ever remember. The great thing about, well, I wish I did it more in my life. I sometimes would fret over a mistake, and it would burden me for the rest of the game. And there was other times I'd make a mistake, and guys goes, don't worry about it, Phil. I said, I'm not worried about it. Get ready. I might throw six today. Because that was just yeah. – and so I kind of had that mentality all through the playoffs that year.
And I remember you after that game saying, you know, I know this was a great game, but it was a great game for all of us.
Right.
I mean, it truly was. I mean, sure. When you think about giant victories in history, this is really one of the great games in giant history.
Well, we broke that string of never winning the championship or whatever. I mean, you know, that was all I kept hearing, you know, from fans constantly, you know, when are you going to win one? So we didn't have to hear that anymore, which was good. And of course the Giants since then have won three other Super Bowls.
Yeah. You know, and I think about this little run to Super Bowl 21, your life in general, coming out of Morehead and trying to, you know, impress upon everybody in New York that you could be the starting quarterback. You have one coach when you first get here. Then Parcells comes here, and you're not sure whether or not he's on your side or he wants his other quarterback.
Oh, no, I was sure about that.
He was not on your side.
He was not on my side.
So you start out with Ray Perkins as your head coach, and then lo and behold, they bring in the Jersey Brawler, none other than Bill Parcells.
Jersey Brawler, that's a good name.
I mean, that's exactly what he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was tasked with really setting a new culture for the New York Giants.
No question.
What were your first impressions?
You know, I can't remember a lot early until we went to training camp because he was going to have to pick a quarterback between me and Scott Bruner at the time. And I could get the vibe that I wasn't the guy. Then I was told by a few people that I didn't take some instructions the way I should or whatever. I was combative,
right.
That type or whatever, which I totally is not true. And it wasn't. But that was the way he perceived me or whatever. And I could definitely feel the favoritism was going to Scott Bruner, and it didn't bother me because I knew sooner or later it was going to come back to me. Mm-hmm. And so we practiced, and it was pretty even during preseason, whatever. But he started Scott Bruner. I came in and played, I think about week 5 or 6, and I broke my thumb right away. Driving down, score a touchdown. Next time I throw the ball, hit my thumb, broke, out for the year. Mm. Probably saved my career in New York, Boomer.
Really?
Yeah, because that team went 3-12-1.
Without
so they had to clean the house. I wasn't part of it. And I think about that sometimes. Yeah. Maybe that could have been the end for me. But they were going to let him go and hire Howard Schnellenberger. And Howard Schnellenberger turned the job down.
Wow.
And, which is amazing.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize
but
that.
But he turned it down. Yeah. And Bill Parcells came to me and he goes, Sims, you know, now we're together. Mm-hmm. He goes, we're going to do it my way. And then he turned into Bill Parcells. He became... took control of everything, coached everybody, and right away we go to camp with a bunch of new rookies, a new team, and you can see everything has changed. We're entirely different.
Well, this is where the culture now changes.
That was it.
And what he needs is he needs a combative quarterback to kind of get
to take him.
Right, to take him and to deal with him, right? Because it was tough on you.
Yes. You know, I just tell people I can't explain and put it in words quick enough how hard it was at times. To walk in a locker room at 7:30 in the morning, okay? I walk in. I'm the first guy there. He's there sitting in the middle at the coffee or at the little table, and he sees me. He stands up. Sims, I mean, are you going to practice better today than you did yesterday? How many passes did you complete in practice? I mean, you didn't complete many. I'm like, He goes, I couldn't sleep last night. Tossed and turned the whole damn night.
Yeah.
And then I'm cleaning it up.
Right.
And my wife says, oh, Bill, what's the matter? He goes, oh, my effing quarterback can't complete a pass. So I am a nervous wreck. I'm breaking out in the cold sores. And I go in the meetings. And, you know, of course, now all the coaches know about it. And they're all going, look out today. Don't be getting away of Phil. And the receiver coach said something. I'll go tell the receivers it might come a little harder today. And I said, shut up, Pat. I don't want to hear it. But that was, but Boomer, this went on constantly.
Yeah, but see, this is the point. Here he knows he has a quarterback that can handle a lot of this stuff. Maybe you're not showing that you can't handle
it. No, I took
it.
I took it.
But you took it, right?
What was great?
When did you finally start giving it back?
Oh, almost from the beginning.
Oh, really? Yes.
I mean, you know, I'd come to sidelines. We'd have arguments. Sometimes he would shut me up, and I would get scared because I always knew he was the man. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know how it is. That was a relationship. He allowed certain players to yell back at him. He probably picked on about seven of us, and he would tear us up for no reason to send a message to the rest of the guys, but you could yell back at him. But sometimes I'd walk the sidelines, and he would go, shut up, before I, you know, like, I'm the coach, and you play. You got it? I got it.
Yeah, I got it, yes,
I knew that was when I couldn't fight back with him at
you
all.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is he might have beaten you down during the week, but when you got to Sunday, before a game on Sunday, he probably built you up, I would think. It sounds like that's the kind of motivation that he would use on a guy that can handle it.
He was Vince Lombardi. Mm-hmm. You know, beat him up during the week, love him up before the game. That's what he was. He really was. He did that all the time. Before the Super Bowl, he kept going, that's it, Sims. Come on, baby. Just throw. Let it go. Let's play. And all that things. And my opening game, our opening game in 1984, which, you know, I tell quarterbacks this and they can't believe it. But I'm walking out of the locker room door and he's standing there shaking hands. And he goes, Sims, if you don't throw at least two interceptions, you're not taking enough chances. And I go, well, I can take care of that. But it's the truth. He said it, and it kind of like, okay, man.
It's going to relax you a little bit.
It does relax you. He was great at relaxing you. It didn't always work because I played many games where it was the opposite, where I was afraid of making that mistake. So,
but what was it like when Lawrence Taylor finally showed up and you saw somebody that did something on the field that you'd never seen before, but there were different rules for different players, obviously?
Well, sure. The first scrimmage we had with Lawrence Taylor, it lasted, I'm going to say, no exaggeration, I'm going to say he lasted 10 plays, and they had to take him out of the scrimmage.
Really?
Because we couldn't run a play.
It was that good.
He sacked every, there were seven passes, and he had seven sacks.
Right.
Swear to God. I'm just going, oh, my God, this guy is unbelievable. And, all right, stop. Get out, Lawrence. We can't evaluate anybody.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, on that same staff is Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wasn't Tom Coughlin on that staff as
Tom
well?
Tom Coughlin later was. Charlie Weiss, Al Groh, Romeo Crennel. I always do that. I look back at those Super Bowl pictures and go, man, we had some coaching staff. I mean, so many of them became, you know, head coaches.
Phil Sims, who became the Giants starting quarterback as a rookie in 1979, I was a high school senior. In his 2004 book, Sunday Morning Quarterback, he wrote that he disagrees with those coaches and pundits who insist that you shouldn't play a quarterback as a rookie because it might ruin his confidence. So I work with you for many years, so I know how this whole thing breaks down.
Yeah, I know you do.
You're like, throw him out there, let him go, and let's see what they got.
I love that one. Oh, you worried about his confidence. Well, man, you know, when you play football, all it is adversity, right?
Right.
I mean, when you overcome, you're like, oh, my gosh, we did it. So if it destroys his confidence, I love that. Oh, so-and-so's career was ruined because he started with the team that was bad. I go, no. He wasn't the guy. If you're not mentally tough enough to withstand some adversity in football, especially as quarterback, you and I talk about this all the time, and it's probably about the only thing we agree upon. It's just really how to treat the quarterback and what you're supposed to be and what we perceive to be an NFL franchise quarterback.
You know, being around you for as many years as I have, I know that you have a real sense of pride being a part of the Giant culture and the family and watching Eli Manning do his thing and winning a couple Super Bowls. You were part of Super Bowls. How about Daniel Jones?
I look at Daniel Jones. I see everything you want in a real big-time NFL quarterback. Look, even my son, who's in this business too, goes, man, I was wrong. I didn't think he was going to be this good, but man, and you even watching the game the other night, not long ago, you text me, my gosh, Daniel Jones can really spin it. And in quarterbacks, that's about the best compliment you can give to the other quarterback.
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's also this lack of understanding of how difficult it is to do what he's trying to do. I mean, and under the biggest spotlight. I mean, it's New York. It's all the tabloids, all the fans, and the Giants have one of the biggest fan bases in all the NFL.
Right. Well, all I do is say is this. I just judge him. I can't judge the win-loss record and all the other stuff and all the other players right now. I judge him, and when I see him, I just go, hey, I don't care about whatever you say about the Giants, but I know Daniel Jones played well, and I like what I see.
So do I. So do you like what you see when you look at me?
Well, it's not about what I think, but you think very highly of yourself. As people want to know, let me tell them, as he walks in the studio every Sunday, he goes, man, do I look good. Woo, look at this.
I appreciate that.
Yes, thank you.
All right, thanks, Phil Sims, for joining us today and to all of you watching. I'm Boomer Esiason. I'll see you again right here on Game Time. Good job. Let's go.
So we come back from a break, or it's halftime is starting. I look over and Boomer's talking. I go, did you just drink a 5-hour energy? You dang right I did.
So I can get through this day, man.